It's January 10th, 2018, the Wednesday Night Learning Group. So we're doing some Chumash tonight. Bit of a change of pace. Now we'll start off with a question pertaining to the story of Moshe, the birth of Moshe. But we mean really the fact that according to the laws that were in effect at the time, Moshe really should not have been alive, because Paro had given out the decree that all the Jewish males that were born should be killed. And that was the period of time in which Moshe was born. It's also interesting to note, you know, maybe make a side note of it, come back to it at some point. It's also interesting to note that the Ramban says, you have to deduce that this decree was only in effect for a short period of time. Because when the Jews left, they left, you know, with hundreds of thousands of males. And had this policy continued, then there wouldn't have been any Jewish males left. But what's interesting is that the Torah doesn't record the rescinding of the decree. It does record the enactment of it. But there's not a word about the rescinding. So that's an interesting question. But put that on the side. That's not our issue for the time being. So it says that the whole story that according to the way Chazal, that Amram got together with Yocheved because they had separated, and it was Miriam's idea that they should get together. You know, that your decree is harsher than Paro's. It says that she gave birth. Interestingly, it says Vatera Oso Kitovu. They saw that he was good, which is a strange expression. I think Ramban talks about it. I mean, because babies are all parents consider their children to be good. Then it says they hid him for 3 months. So they were able to hide him for 3 months, but I guess afterwards, you know, became known that there's a baby in the house. Lo yochla od hatzpino. Couldn't hide him anymore. So they took a basket of goma, and they plastered it with, I don't know, pitch and whatever, tar, pitch, whatever. So they prepared a little basket, a cradle, whatever you want to call it, and then they sort of insulated it. And they put the child in it, and they placed it on the, the sand, on the bank of the river, the Nile River. And then his sister stood watch from the distance in order to know what would happen to him. So the question this fellow asked is, well, what kind of thing is this? What was their plan? One gets the impression that they took action to try and save him. That's pretty obvious. Can't question that. But if you want to save him, what kind of plan is this? Now, were they relying on a miracle? I mean, we know that he was saved, in point of fact. But just because something turned out well or right, that doesn't necessarily justify the plan. That is, we don't say that the ends justifies the means in this sense. That sometimes a person will be sloppy and he'll make a stupid move or investment or whatever, and it turns out that it was unbeknownst to him and it worked out well. That doesn't justify anything. So the question is, what was their plan? What was their idea? What was their plan? And that the subject of Pasuk Beis and Gimel is Yocheved. Because it says, Vatara Isha. So she became pregnant. And she saw that. So, and then everything seems to be following she, and she is Yocheved. Okay, so what's the question now? So what's the problem? So then, suddenly Miriam, what? To what extent Aaron was involved in this? You can mention Aaron, but Amram. It doesn't mention Amram. So I don't know. The Torah may not mention him because, you know, this area was essentially the concern of Yocheved, then may must have consented. She didn't disagree. But other than that, it says she did it. Or maybe they did consult and agreed. I don't know. It's a good point. But it's not a problem. So what's the question? And then it says that suddenly the sister enters the picture. So yeah, you see that the whole family was involved, because if it was just Yocheved acting by herself, so how does Miriam suddenly come into the picture? In other words, they must have gone down together then. Right? She did the action, Yocheved, but they must have gone down together, because it says that Miriam stood watch from afar. Whether she did that of her own accord, or whether that was the decision of the family, it would seem it was of her own accord, because she's given credit for that later on. Because it says, Rashi says, that when she was smitten with Saras because of the Lashon Hara about Moshe, so Hashem said that she should be quarantined, so to speak, for 7 days. And it says the nation waited. The nation didn't travel. They waited for Miriam. And Rashi, I don't know the exact statement, but to the effect that she was rewarded. Because just like she waited by the case of Moshe, so too the reward was that the nation waited for her. That would indicate that she was deserving, that it was her idea. My question on that is, maybe you can enlighten me. She's praised very, very highly for this. Like this was some great thing. But what was so great about it? My question is, what indeed was such a great thing? Wouldn't that be the ordinary thing? You'd want to know what happened? I mean, if you're embarking on this plan. You're putting this baby in a certain place. We still don't understand why, what the idea behind it was. But it's only natural that you're going to want to know what happened. So you find a place, I guess a safe distance. Because it says, Meirochok. So obviously she couldn't just be there. Why not? Something we could ask too. Why couldn't she just be closer? Why Meirochok? But the fact that she didn't just go home, but that she stuck around, is considered to be like something terrific. She deserves a reward. But why? This is her brother. And wouldn't the Yocheved have done that? Wouldn't Amram have done that? I mean, what would be the... Why is that such a great thing? In fact, her being there was extremely important, as we know. Because once she saw that Paro's daughter, you know, decided to keep him, picked him up, so she was in position. She ran and she... That was smart and alert to come up with this idea of getting the mother. Well, she didn't tell that to Paro. You know, the Meinekes. And of course, once she was given the right to do that, she picked her mother. So that solidified the connection between Moshe and the family. However, that doesn't explain what was so great. She didn't know that was going to happen. And if she did, so then again, what's so great about that? You also wonder, why was it her? And that Yocheved. You'd expect Yocheved would not leave and want to know what happened. So that's another question. Why would it require this great deed of Miriam? Why wouldn't Yocheved be just as concerned to see what happens? I mean, the question is, does her staying there constitute a danger for her? Now, I don't know. Like in Nazi Germany, for example, any, you know, people who tried to save the Jews put themselves at risk because they would be killed. So there were certain righteous Gentiles, as they say, and they actually took Jews in, protected them, and some of them were caught and they were killed. Because the Germans are absolute and absolutely ruthless. Anything you did to help a Jew, you're going to get killed. There was no, you know, there was no wiggle room with them. Now, I don't know if this was what the law was over here. That is, the decree was to kill all the Jewish males, so they had to hide him. But if it was discovered that they were they also required to give up the Jewish males, and that if it turned out that you didn't, that you'd be killed as well?
Well,
let's get to the major issue. It's obvious, it seems anyways, that the whole purpose was to save the child. Okay, so when people, you know, are in certain, they'll do, you know, like during the, you know, during the Holocaust, the people did everything they could to save their children. They didn't have that many options. Generally, I mean, the only option was if they trusted, they had Gentile neighbors that they really trusted, and they gave them over to them. And it worked in certain cases. There were cases, and there were Gentiles that did not, every one of them converted the children, but there were those that did. Okay, whatever. But at least you see that the plan, let's put aside the religious issue. Because let's say you knew that these Gentiles were not Christians. They weren't religious. And they would not influence the child religiously. So then, if you put that factor aside, the plan makes sense. You know, if they're living on a farm and whatever, and, you know, the child won't be, even if the child is discovered, they could pass it off as their child, they had adopted the child, and the child didn't look Jewish. So then it's something you could pull off. I understand the plan, it's reasonable. So what's the plan of taking a baby in a basket and putting it on the banks of the river? How long can it survive, and what's the idea? How's it going to work? What were they thinking? That's my question. Let's try to, I have an idea. I mean, the Ramban explains that they saw that he was good, meaning that he was extraordinary. They saw special things about him. And therefore, you know, they were encouraged in what they did. I assume it means, not that they were relying on a miracle, but that they had good reason to believe that there would be hashgacha, there would be protection. Because if he was truly unique, and the one that Hashem had designated to be the Moshiach, so then, okay. So then Hashem, well, yeah, but still, you can't rely on a miracle. You can't say that they would just do anything. You have to, like you're saying, if that's the case, so let the situation as it is. Keep him in the house. Because as of yet, he had not been discovered, and hope that he won't be discovered. But that they couldn't do. So I would imagine that we have to say that they had some kind of an idea. So I'd like to suggest the following. First of all, when you consider this, you have to recognize, I'm going to use the term, only because everybody is familiar with it. It's called, you know, the Hail Mary. We don't like to use those words, but practically speaking, it's like in football. When you're desperate, when you're in a situation of desperation, so do you do something which has like a minimal chance? You know, like it's there's 5 seconds on the clock, and you're back on your own 1 yard line, and you need a touchdown. If you get a touchdown, you'll win. But you only have 3 seconds. So then the quarterback, and then he just throws this pass. It's crazy. What are the chances that it's going to work? However, I would imagine if you go through the history, there are cases where it worked. Am I wrong? There are cases where it worked? What?
That's correct.
So is it rational to do the quote-unquote Hail Mary? Is that rational? I would say yes. Because since you have nothing else, there's no other choice. You have no other choice. And this is all I can do. But in order for this to succeed, I mean, the chances are very minimal. Yeah, but at least I'm going to do that. It only becomes a question. I mean, when there's other opportunities, you have a few different possibilities, then we can, you know, judge, analyze which one makes more sense. Okay. But when you have no options, so it's a different spectrum. It's a different context from which you're going to judge the action. Let's put that in place. They didn't have many options. Apparently they did not have, it would appear that they did not have anyone they could entrust the child to. Okay, so still at all, yeah, you don't just put him in the river. That doesn't make any sense. So I would say as follows. What they did was, it's a little bit counterintuitive, because you're putting him out there. And do you want somebody to notice this or not? You want someone to notice it.
Sure.
Obviously. Now who? Egyptians. See, so you have to assume like this. I'm positing a few things, but I think they're reasonable. I mean, the Egyptians, not every Egyptian hated the Jews. And we don't even have any knowledge of that, this whole plot emanated from Paro and his paranoia that the Jews were a fifth column and so on and so forth. But in general, the attitude of the Egyptians toward the Jews, I mean, they wouldn't eat bread with them because of the religious factor. But after Yosef, what he did for the land, and then you see the tremendous honor, they mourned for Yaakov, and so on and so forth. Okay, that was years before, but became part of the Egyptian culture. There's no indication that they were persecuting the Jews, except for Paro, the decree of Paro. Okay? And the same is true even in Germany. There was a lot of anti-Semitism, and Hitler brought it to the fore, but there were plenty of Germans that didn't agree with that. So there were plenty of Egyptians that didn't agree with this, necessarily. Okay? But that doesn't mean that they're going to do anything about it. Because that would be very dangerous. It would be very dangerous to oppose the king. This is the decree of the king. So that's why I'm sure, you know, the average Egyptian just looks the other way. What they wanted to do was to force a confrontation between an Egyptian and this little baby. You know, the Rav said that, I don't know the exact way that he said it. Because in the Kinos, there's a particular story. You know, we have particular stories. So why is this story chosen? So many Jews were killed and so on and so forth. So he said, like, if you tell a person that the Holocaust is a terrible thing, because 6 million is a statistic. You show one picture of a little child being tortured, that's like, people can't take that. You know what I mean? You guys, that's how people function. This was an appeal to the emotions. Because there's a tremendous curiosity. You see, what's that basket doing over there? There's a tremendous curiosity. So what they were hoping for is that some Egyptian would be drawn to it. There's a guy, you don't see these kinds of things. It's not a piece of junk that somehow got washed up on shore. This is, maybe that's part of the description telling you that this thing was carefully constructed. So you know that this was placed there deliberately. So what could it possibly be? So there's going to be somebody that's going to go over. And once they open it, they're going to see a beautiful baby. And they're going to know that it's a Jewish child. They'll all come true. But can you now walk away from this? It's a whole different thing. You tell a person about the tragedies that are happening in this country, in Syria, okay. But you actually show a child suffering and crying, it breaks your heart. That's what they show, even with the, they have all these commercials for these animal shelters. You know, these animals that have been abandoned and treated cruelly. And they show pictures of the dog is freezing, shivering. It breaks your heart. It really does, because, people identify with that. How much more so with a child? So I think, I have another line of interpretation, but my basic line is that the plan itself did make sense. Because you're, to the contrary, you're putting the baby right out there. And you're forcing the Egyptian to confront the decree. And you're going to make him personally responsible. It's going to be very, very hard for a person. I mean, there are people that won't even look. They'll just keep going. There are people that will look, and it will tug at their heart and whatever, but they'll just keep going. I can't get involved. But then there will be that person that, I can't. I'll be responsible. I got to take care of this baby. And they'll take the baby. Their emotions will overpower them. I believe that was the idea of the plan. And if you look at it that way, given that there was no other given that there were no alternatives over here, it makes a lot of sense. That's your last shot. The irony, it'll be an Egyptian that winds up breaking the law of Egypt and saving the Jewish child. It's interesting. I just read it recently. So, you know, there were different ways that people used those people who were able to survive, either in Germany or one of the occupied states, were able to survive without getting deported. Without getting recognized as Jews. Now, most of the time, you're in that situation, so the intuitive thing is to find a hiding place. Okay? And sometimes you can find... But there is... The thing is like this, that's exactly where they're going to look for you. And then, because they... You know, they know what the hiding places are likely to be. And you may be able to outsmart them, and they won't find the hiding place, but that's where they're going to search for you. There was this one guy that did the exact opposite. He would hang out at all the, you know, the cafes, the shopping, the super, exactly the places where no one's expecting him to be. And he was able to get through that way. He didn't hide. He was right out there in the center because nobody was looking for him over there. Nobody expected that any Jew that was trying to escape, to evade, would be in hiding. So here too, hiding didn't work. The idea of hiding didn't work, but precisely the opposite, like sort of throwing this baby in your face. This is what you are, baby killers. Are you prepared to do that? That I believe was the hope. And there you have the hashgacha, that person would come along who was of that disposition. Now, in fact, that's exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened. But it worked out better than they could have imagined. But I maintain that it's possible. See, because it turned out to be the daughter of Pharaoh. And she was bathing there. And you know the story. And she sees this. And she tells her maidens to fetch it. And they fetch it. And she opens it. And right when she opens it, and he was an Arboch, he was crying. Why does the Pusik have to mention that he was crying? All babies cry. That's of no consequence. You see? If you take a look at the Pusik says that she went down to bathe right after they put the baby there. This couldn't have been too long. And she saw the teva, and she sent her maiden to fetch it, and she opened it, and she saw the yelad, v'hine nar bocha. He was crying. Rashi says, because was it the angel, Gabriel? Was it somebody who gave him a little pinch on the face? A little patch. Says Rashi. I believe Rashi says that. It's definitely a midrash that the angel came. Yeah, but why does it have to tell you? What's it telling you by all of that? What's the idea? So the angel would mean that it was a hashgacha. But well, okay, so what? Why did he have to be crying? Oh, because that, you see, it was, she had to overcome her resistances. Not so simple. The daughter of Pharaoh apparently was a righteous person. And she disagreed with the decree of killing the male children. But now she was confronting a real situation. And now, because it says, look at the structure of the Pasuk Vav. It says that she opened and she saw the yelad. And he was nar bocha, vatachmol olav, and her mercies were brought forth, vatomer, and she said, mialde evrimze. What's the tziruf over here? What's the connection? I mean, it's very, very precise. Because it wasn't a guarantee that she would save him. There was no guarantee. You get the sense that she was involved in an inner struggle. That she was opposed. She was opposed to this. But what could she do? That was her father's decree. So she was in a serious conflict. But the emotions won her over. The crying brought forth the pity, the mercy. And then she said that he's from the Jews. But when she said he's from the Jews, when she acknowledged that, she was already in an emotional state where she was connected to this kid. And it could have, see, that's how the emotions are. Had he not been crying, and had she said, well, he's Jewish, before her emotions were disposed in that direction, could have worked out differently. It's very, very precise. Everything is very precise. That's the precise moment that Miriam jumps in. At that precise moment, you got to solidify it. You can't wait. Because with these things, who knows? She could change her mind. That's the idea of, you know, you got to strike when the opportunity is there. So, in other words, okay, you've made the decision. You're going to keep the child. She didn't even ask her, well, are you going to keep the child? No, she didn't ask her, shall I go and get... In other words, yeah, that reinforces the idea. Once people talk to you that way, yeah, of course. What you say? No, I'm not going to... Well, I haven't decided yet. I have to think it over. No, she solidifies the decision. That is, okay, what can, I'll go and I'll get you a nurse. Because there's no question that you're going to save her, and there's no question that you need a nurse, and the best nurse would be someone from the Ibrios. And, see, that's crucial. Then she said, Lechi. Lechi, go. Once she said go, it's a done deal. How she'll deal with her father? She apparently was able to deal with her father, because you don't read of any conflict over there. That how she brought him into the palace, and so on and so forth. You know, apparently she's a daughter and she has some kind of sway. And Paro did not oppose this.
So she was probably young.
What?
She was probably young.
Yelling?
No, she was young.
I don't know. I don't know how old she was at that point. I don't know. But she was able to get her way. No, it's interesting. You see that even with Paro, I mean, a brutal tyrant, there still is emotions. Because really, see, I don't know if this would have worked with a Hitler. Hitler's anti-Semitism was of a different nature. It was absolute. It was unyielding. It was ideological. Didn't lend itself to any type of modification. Although he did have some exceptions. There's a fascinating story about Hitler's Jewish spy. It's a book. It's a true story, which I can't go into right now. He did reserve the right when he made that law that Aryans and Jews weren't Aryans, therefore they couldn't be members of the German state and so on and so forth. But he did reserve the right in certain instances to Aryanize a Jew. To declare, even though the guy was Jewish, to declare that he was a real German. There were a few cases where he did so. So there's this book on Hitler's Jewish spy. But I don't have the time anyways, and it's an interesting book. Fascinating book. Whoever is interested, the book is by, it's called Hitler's Jewish Spy by Michael Bar Zohar. There may be another author as well, but that's enough information if you go on Amazon. But I don't think that this would have done it. That a daughter, if he had a daughter, someone that he loved, had this particular attachment to a Jewish baby, I doubt very much that he would make the exception. He would not allow his emotions. Those Jews that he Aryanized, he did so because they had a tremendous benefit to, you know, his state, to the Nazi state, in his mind. Not because of emotions. But Paro was a different type. And apparently he was you could move him on the emotional level to make an exception, which he did. Now, having come this far, we've tried to show that they did have a rationality to the plan. Of course, two things must be considered. A, no options. There were no other options. And B, the well-founded hope that there was divine hashkacha over here. Okay, at work. But that doesn't excuse you. In other words, the hashkacha factor doesn't excuse you from using a, you know, intelligence and or something reasonable. You can't just, because then you're relying on a miracle. So I would say it's even possible that they were aware it's not far-fetched to say that they were aware of the daughter of Paro, that she was a merciful person. And they were could have been aware that she came out. I mean, this was not the first time she came out to bathe. So this could have been a regular habit of hers, in which case it wasn't an accident that they picked the exact place that the daughter of Paro came. So it could be, as I say, on two levels. One, on the general level, that even if, because they, I don't know that they knew for sure, that if the daughter of Paro doesn't come for whatever reason, the plan itself still makes sense, because you are forcing a confrontation between the baby and an ordinary Egyptian. And that could very well, like I said, it's very hard for a person. There's many people going by. I mean, many people will just walk away, but there are some people, especially a woman, that can't. They're just going to fall in love with this baby. They can't live with themselves that they put this baby back in a basket to die. So in that sense, it would make sense. See, of course, the idea of her watching makes perfect sense. And that is, let's see what happened. Was he saved altogether? And if so, who? They would want to know who saved him. Assuming they didn't know for sure that the daughter of Paro would be the one. So they could keep track, some kind of track. Now, what would have happened if nobody, and he was left there? Let's assume that, you know, a period of time went by and he would not be able to survive much longer. Would she then go and pluck him and try something else? I don't know. For all these reasons, it was essential that somebody stay behind and watch. So she stayed behind and watched. She was committed to staying behind and watching. Okay. So apparently that's a great thing. Because like we said, it's not just watching. I mean, it's an assignment. And she may... If hours and hours went by and nobody stopped and nobody, and then she figured he could be dying now, she might have decided to take that risk and grab the baby and walk off with it and take that risk, because, you know, she would have no choice. So maybe that level of commitment that she's going to stick with this to the end, maybe that's the greatness of her deed. She didn't just do what she had to do and then, okay, I can't do anymore. But she was committed to sticking with this to the end. Okay, that makes it a little bit easier to understand. But I'm just trying to say that the plan makes sense on two levels. That it's not absurd to say that there was a good basis to believe that the daughter of Paro would get involved. Okay, I'm speculating. Because the speculation is that they were aware that the daughter of Paro was a merciful person, and was that's possible that they'd be aware of that. You know, talk gets around; people talk. That's something which could have gotten out, and they could have. It's not a stretch to say that they were aware that she would go down to the Nile to bathe there. So that's one possibility. Okay, but as I said, even. It's hard to say that they knew that for sure, that things would turn out as they did. They weren't operating with a nevuah. So then I'm saying the general plan would be that they're going to play upon the emotions of people, to put people in a situation where they're forced to confront the reality of what they're doing to the Jews via a baby. People have a totally different emotion. They're killing babies. You talk about that. Babies. And they even kill babies. That's something which the whole world recognizes. That's one of the reasons. One of the reasons why they... Because at first the Germans would kill the Jews by firing. You know, they'd line them all up. You know, and they had dug the pits. They had the Jews dig their own graves. Dug these pits. And then groups of whatever. And they'd shoot them all. Men, women, and children, they'd fall into the pits. Then they'd have the next group. But that was very, very difficult because the killers were going, they were getting drunk and alcoholic. They couldn't, even these people who are the the lowest level, you know, of animal, but they couldn't be emotional. They couldn't deal with it. So there was tremendous problems that I don't know if they were committing suicide, but they couldn't, they definitely were getting had to drink a tremendous amount, becoming like alcoholics, because it was just too painful to do that. So that's one of the reasons they had to sanitize it, to make it something which was indifferent, mechanized. So you didn't face the victim and shoot him in the head. How much more so? I mean, there were Germans that they were especially cruel to the children. The Nazis were. But that's already a Nazi. But the average German could not deal with that, especially with babies. You'd have to transform yourself into a Nazi. I mean, that's a different phenomenon. You've been corrupted by this crazy ideology. I mean, just like the Arabs today, those who kill, they have no mercy whatsoever. They think that they're doing a wonderful thing. Even they kill Jewish babies and so forth. They have absolutely no mercy. That's the Nazification. But the average ordinary individual who has not gone through that process, they call it radicalization, you know, like the self-radicalized. I mean, there's a process of radicalization which transforms you into some kind of monster that's able to do these things, and to the contrary, you think you're doing the right thing. But as I said, the average individual has mercy. And the greatest degree of mercy is for children, for babies. How could they do that to babies? That's something which people can't imagine. So that, I think, is the plan. They had no choice. And given the options, there was a rationale here. And, of course, it worked out. Worked out better than they could have hoped. Or maybe they did have that hope, but they couldn't count on it.